Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Welcome to the afternoon show with Bill Arnold. I am the Bill Arnold part of that last sentence. Awfully nice that you're with me today. We're going to have news and issues and weather permitting. We'll even talk about the weather. So we've got a great show. We've got Becky Patton in studio, and I'm excited to start in with her almost immediately. She has a book out called Holy Sexuality, Beginning with Questions, and she's the founder of True Essence. So because she's my in-studio guest, and I can hardly wait to bring her onto the show. And she's also a friend of Dr. Peter Kapsner, who is the morning host of the morning show. So we've got lots in common. Let's get started. Hello, Becky.
Hi, Bill.
It's so nice of you to come in. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Well,
I'm
glad.
I'm excited to be here.
Great. Now, I think listeners would love to start getting to know you a little bit and hear, if you don't mind, a little bit of your story.
Well, like you said, I have a ministry, and it's called True Essence.
Yes.
And the reason I started the ministry was because what I found was there was a gap. Am I doing something wrong?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, you're doing nothing
wrong. I've never
done
radio before, so. Okay.
You're doing great.
Okay. What I found is I felt like there was this gap that was going on in the Christian church of how we talked about sexuality and spirituality in the same sentence. What I found is spirituality was something that was talked about as very holy and righteous and all of this, but sexuality was something that was held over to the side. And so from my own story, and it came literally from my own journey of being hungry to find how do those two intersect. I grew up in a Christian home. I was a PK. I had absolutely beautiful access to wonderful parents that parented me well, but didn't know how to give me a language around this. And in the course of growing up, I experienced outside my home, I experienced some sexual abuse that actually helped shape me and shaped my sexuality in a way that I didn't actually understand until I became an adult, because the brain has this incredible capacity to push down pain and push it away. And that's what I did. So as a child, what happened to me got pushed away, but yet my body still held that. And so when it started rising up and showing up in my anger, in my need to isolate, in all these different ways where trauma had impacted me, and I tried to go to the church and nobody had answers for me. And it was impacting my marriage is what it was doing. And I married to an absolutely amazing man that I would not be where I'm at today if it wasn't for him walking with me on that journey. But what I found is I had to go back to the scriptures, and the scriptures took me into this place where I started exploring, well, what does it actually mean that I am a sexual human being, and how does that intersect with who God is? So it led me on a journey that ultimately, I want to say, a healing journey that I believe all of us are on for the rest of our life. I don't believe anybody ever gets to, like, complete something, because I think there's something that will continually be completed in goodness in us. So it's kind of been a wild journey. And then one day somebody said to me, why don't you write some of this down? I'm not an author. I mean, I'm like, I don't know how to write a book. I don't know what that's about. And some beautiful people came around me and helped me do that and put some words down on paper that I still believe most of them. But I think for any author who writes something, you're kind of like, oh, my goodness, am I going to believe this 2 years from now?
Uh-huh.
Because you're still growing and learning.
Mm-hmm.
So I do believe what I wrote, but I think there's more. So that's what I've continued to find.
Let's jump back to your story a little bit, Becky.
Okay.
Is this a fair statement? You deal with it, or it will deal with you?
Oh, that is a $10,000 statement, Bill.
Because
it will deal with you.
I can take that right to the bank.
You can take it right to the bank and cash that check. You know what's interesting? There's a book. Have you ever read the book, The Body Keeps the Score?
No.
Awesome book. Absolutely one of the best books, I think, written by, he's a professional psychologist that has actually studied how the body hangs on to emotional pain.
Mm.
And so what happens, so to your point, it was ruling me. It really was.
Mm-hmm.
It was affecting me. And so, but I didn't know how, and I didn't have the language for it. And in the church, the language I was given, well, just if you pray hard enough, it'll go away, or it will be healed, or you're not living. This is the question thing I got over and over again. Well, you're not really living in your healing, or you're not living out the fullness of what God has promised you, when I still had physical body reactions that were coming. And it was like, who was going to help me? And it, I mean, I, to this day, I'm grateful for the psychologist that I got into, or the psychiatrist that I got to see, or the pastors that helped me along the way, that helped me understand that my body's reaction wasn't needed to catch up and with what I was learning in my mind, but also what I was spiritually learning.
Becky, so, was there some spiritual abuse connected to this as well? I mean, Christians can get awfully reductionistic at times, can't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or aren't you doing this? If you're doing this, everything should be fine. But that's not the case, because there's more to it than that.
There's always more to it. And that's the thing that I think is hard, because we want to have the answer. The answer. And I want to say, I think there are a lot of answers.
Mm-hmm. As we think about the listeners right now, and we're dealing with issues that are involve personal pain and brokenness, do you think there's a lot of people listening right now that are in a similar situation, where there's still something that has been swept under the rug that they have not dealt with, and now they're in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, or even 70s?
I can guarantee that that's going on.
All right. Let's take a little break. When we come back, more with Becky Patton, the founder of True Essence and author of Holy Sexuality, Beginning with Questions. If you have a question and you just can't wait to get it to me, 877-933-2484 would be the text number. And you can also call and get on the show if you'd like to do that as well. Or bill@myfaithradio.com. Those are all the options. We'll be back in a minute. More with Becky Patton.
Because his word is unbreakable, our hope is unshakable. That's a great quote from Max Lucado. You see, hope changes everything. When you support Faith Radio during our fall fundraiser known as Share, you provide hope and encouragement for all who listen. Whether they hear the relevant Bible preaching and teaching over the air, online through our website or mobile app, or on demand, lives are changed. Please pray and then call 877-933-2484, and at the prompt, press 2 to begin your dollar-a-day gift. That's $30 a month, or as we like to say, Team 360. Whatever you decide to give on behalf of Faith Radio, please know that we appreciate you and your kindness and generosity. And remember, lives are changed every day through the programming that you provide through your prayers and generous support. Please call 877-933-2484, and at the prompt, press 2 to start your pledge. Thank you, and God bless you.
The Big Hand is on the 12. Awfully glad you joined me today, Bill Arnold in studio, and I'm with Becky Patton. She's the founder of True Essence. It's a ministry that is committed to informing and enriching lives that reflect the truest essence of God's love. She's the author of Holy Sexuality, Beginning with Questions. And that's probably a good place for me to start, Becky, is with questions. So your approach is to begin with questions. Why is that so helpful?
Because I think too often we rush to the answer without actually realizing what our real question is. And the whole context behind the book was, is I took the top five questions that I get asked over and over again.
What are they?
And I put right off the top of my head.
Well, I mean, just give me maybe one.
Okay. Is masturbation a sin?
Okay.
That's one of the number one questions I get asked.
Yeah.
Is sex before marriage a sin? I get asked that all the time. Or where's the line?
Yeah.
I get asked that all the time. And I think what happens is we rush so quickly, just give me the answer and then I'll know where I fall. Do I fall on the right or do I fall on the left? Where if I'm on the left, or if, no, I don't want to use right or left. If I fall in the good, then I'm okay. But if I fall in what would be we consider bad, what do I have to do in order to come back to the good? And we miss something.
Yeah. So really the question is, where's the bar? And then I just need to be slightly above the bar, which is a really a bad approach.
And so what we've done is we've reduced sexuality into something that has a check box versus something that I believe our sexuality is this vast array of sensuality, learning how to live with desire, learning how to recognize our senses and what they actually teach us, and learning how to be engaged with another human being in that way is, oh my gosh, if we all bear the image of God, can you imagine two people coming together that bear the image of God and suddenly their senses come alive, their desire comes alive? I mean, we're talking about something sacred and holy. Mm-hmm. And why do we reduce it down to something that is just bad?
How did this get so complicated? This is so complicated.
It is so complicated,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, and that's why we have to begin with questions, I think.
Uh-huh. So what are some of the big questions we should start with?
One of the best questions I think is, how should we teach our kids about sex?
Okay. And how was it done in the past?
Well, I think how it's been done in the past is we gather all this information, we gather all these materials, we try to create something that's really, really special, and we wait until a certain age, and then we take this child away, and we do this build-up towards something. And from my experience, and when I've talked to people, is most people remember the first 20 seconds of their parents' sex talk to them. And then they shut down because they have absolutely no barrier. They have nothing. They're like, they can't hear anything else.
Right.
And what I would love to see is, and I would just love to see us, how about if we start giving our kids 100 one-minute sex talks?
100 one-minute sex talks?
Yeah. Like, I mean, something happens in real time.
Okay.
And, I mean, I had an instance with Peter Kapsner's son. I had an instance one time where his son was playing with a motor car up and over my shoulders. He was running it around. And then all of a sudden he started pushing it down underneath my shirt to go down my sleeve. Mm-hmm. It ran down my sleeve. And I'm sitting across from his parents. I'm sitting right there watching him do this. And I know what this kid is doing. He's maybe 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tunnel. It's not a sexual engagement. It's a tunnel that he's trying to, and to be used language with him around what he was doing and give him boundaries around my body was something that we got to do in just 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? He was just, I mean, I just think that there are so many 1 minute sex talks we can have versus waiting for one 100 minute sex talk that the kids don't even hear. And so it creates embarrassment versus engagement with parents.
And these 1 minute sex talks would start as young as three, right?
Oh, they would start actually, younger? I think as soon as you hold this child in your arms.
Okay. So when we take these questions, where are we going for these answers?
Well, where do you go for your answers, Bill?
Well, I don't have any big questions anymore.
You got all your questions answered then.
Most of them are lined up and answered, yeah.
Oh, they are? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But okay. I mean, got a lot of questions answered from, well, let's see. I can't say my mom, but yeah, some answered from family.
Okay.
And then obviously God's word teaches a certain standard, and I loved that, so yeah.
Okay, so here's the thing is I think we've got three circles of influence that we all experience. One is our family of origin. And that's a really strong one. Another is culture. I think culture has a lot of things. A lot of times we go to culture to see. Believe it or not, we use culture like magazines, TV, and that's where we get a lot of our informed elements of what sex is or sexuality is. And then our third one is religion. Now, I'm curious, which one do you think influences you the most?
Rebecca, you want to jump in on that one?
Because you don't want to. Well, the right answer, I think, is that what we believe, what we know to be true for those people out there listening that cling to saving faith in Jesus, it should be the Bible. It should be the source of God's word. I'm not sure that that's the one we go to the most often.
That's my answer, too.
Maybe that is more revealing than we like.
Yeah, same answer.
Great answer, you two. Just great answer. I love it.
We think alike.
You do. You think alike. You're just thinking in tune with one another.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay. See, that's the male and female coming together. That's wonderful, right?
Thank you, yes.
What's really interesting is religion has the deepest impact, I believe, on family of origin and also on culture, either pro or anti. If you think about it, because, I mean, if you think about right now, I cannot tell you how many people I see in my daily practice where I experience people help trying to deconstruct their faith that they've said, well, wait, religion told me this and I don't believe it, so I'm going with what culture says.
Mm.
Or what happens is they come in and they said, I just totally threw away my religion and I'm totally buying into what culture because religion has set too many rules.
That's not good. That's not good. Becky Patton is my guest in studio, and we're going to take a little break. Unfortunately, we need to do this, but when we come back, lots more with her. And if you want to ask a question, 877-933-2484, you can call or text to that number, 877-93-FAITH. We'll be back in just a minute. It's 20 minutes after the hour. Becky Patton is in studio with me. She's written a book called Holy Sexuality, Beginning with Questions. Okay, why holy sexuality and why is holy sexuality so attractive?
You know, the name came to me one night when I mean, it sounds silly, but I was asleep and I had this dream. I was trying to find, I had this, all these different book titles coming to me. And I literally, it was Caribou Coffee. I go to a Caribou Coffee in my little town, and there's this group of, there's an atheist, there's a Jew, there's like six different guys in this. One is an old mafia.
Sounds like the start of a good joke.
It is. I mean, it really, you guys, these guys are unbelievable. They are unbelievable. And they had befriended me, and they found out that I was writing a book, and they wanted to know what it was about. And honestly, what I was doing, I was trying to shut them up.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, I'm writing a book about sexuality and spirituality. And I thought that'd be the end of the conversation. All six of these guys pulled their chairs over to my table, and they said, okay, we're going to tell you our stories. These guys are all in their 60s, 70s, uh-huh. and 80s. And what they said to me, I said, this is the book title that I'm looking at, is Holy Sexuality. Because it had come in a dream to me, and I felt like, well, that, wow, that felt, okay, that's it. And they looked at me, they says, there's no way something that has wounded me so much is holy. Mm. And I said to them, these older men who had been wounded by the, some of them had been abused by the Catholic Church, some Ouch. Of them had been running away from amazing stories. I mean, this is sacred ground. And what I looked at them and I said, but what if it is holy and what you experienced isn't holy? And what if there's a God that wants to redeem and call forth something from what you want to throw away, but instead there would be a God that could actually heal? And they all looked at me and they go, well, it would be holy then.
These nice.
Are, I mean, that's my Caribou group.
Yeah,
these
I like
guys.
It.
I love these guys.
I like it.
So anyway, that's how the name.
That's good. I like the name. So how are we going to develop a good and open and welcoming environment in churches so we can have these discussions and use compassion and wisdom?
I think we have to look at our own stories and we have to look at our own roots. How did we get our own view, and what's our view of God related to this? What's our view of ourselves, our own bodies, and what is our view of sexuality? And we have to go back to some of the foundations. And I believe there is a way that we can deconstruct some of what we've learned in order to reconstruct something that holds some real pillars of faith and foundation and also freedom and fun. I mean, God created this after all, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and God didn't have to make this pleasurable. It is. God didn't have to make, I believe that the ability we have to harm one another is also the strength and the ability we have to heal one another. So we've got, how do we do it? We have to start looking at, how do we actually view God in this? How do we view one another? How do we view ourselves? And I think some of it is we have to re-fall in love with God, and we have to fall in love with ourselves. I mean, these bodies are amazing things. They are absolutely fascinating and amazing things. And I think there's something to celebrate.
Becky, it seems that sex, power, money are mm-hmm. the most corruptible things there in existence.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the enemy is going to want to go after all three with all the energy in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at the way sex is being viewed in our world today, the corruption value is just through the roof. So to talk about a biblical, holy, sanctified sort of sexuality, you're going to be the biggest weirdo in the world, which is...
I already am.
Well, I know you are, but which is absolutely fine with me, and it's fine with any Christian
yeah.
that loves the mm-hmm. Lord. But So how do we build the bridge to have the connections to people, to have these kinds of conversations so they can find a holy sexuality?
You know, the thing about it is I have found most people I know are not afraid to talk about sex. The place where the most discomfort comes is I found it inside the church. So I can have this conversation in Caribou mm-hmm. with an atheist. I mean, I'm not going to go into the joke, but I mean, literally, honestly, I can have huge conversations with them that are real, that are honest, but they involve both pain and what I feel the peace I bring is hope. Because my own story holds, I mean, this almost took my marriage. This almost destroyed me. This almost, I literally at times thought when I was going through some of the healing work, I thought, I am crazy. But somewhere deep inside of me, there was something more. And I believe that that's the truest essence, which thus that's where we get the name for the ministry, is the truest essence of me has never gone away. It was created in, I was crafted in God's image. I bear God's image. Nobody's taken that away. Now, a lot of things have happened to me that have tried to destroy that or have tried to manipulate that or power over me. But never, ever, you cannot take that image away. You cannot take God's image out of me. It's there. And do you have kids, Bill?
No.
You don't have kids? You're getting ready to have a...
Yes.
You do. You are, Rebecca. Mm-hmm. That baby is going to bear your image, right? It's going to bear a part of you. It will mm-hmm. look like you. There's that mm-hmm. element. You will never be able to take that out. And when you look into the face of a child, what you see is you see a reflection of yourself and some of your spouse or your partner. I mean, whoever you're there. There's a reality. You see that. And I think what we need to remember, the only way we're going to begin healing this is if we remember to see the image of God in one another. It's in every single person. Some people, we have to look really hard and deep for it.
Mm-hmm. What about if you have brokenness or pain from your past that you would like healing for, but the person that you were hurt by has no interest and is not available to make any kind of forgiveness or mm-hmm. anything? How do you move on?
Well, the reality is I think we have to recognize there's a difference between reconciliation and restoration. And reconciliation, it requires two people to come together. And you can't guarantee that you cannot go on this journey because you want someone else to fulfill your need. You need to go on this journey because you're worth going on this journey. And what I know is regardless of whether that person ever comes and says, you know, I'm sorry, then restoration could happen, or I need to repent of this, then restoration could happen. But the reality is that may never happen.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't determine God's goodness.
Becky, I know there's an event coming up with Transform Minnesota. We've mm-hmm. only got 25 seconds, so can you talk about that in 25 seconds?
In 25 seconds?
Yeah.
The reality, it's a three-part class, and what it is it's re-examining sexuality and spirituality is what it is, what we're going
to
actually do.
Would I go to transform.org? TransformMinnesota.org?
You can go there, or you can go to my website also, because there's another...
And your website is...
TrueEssence.net.
TrueEssence.net. Becky, thank you so much for coming into the studio. You've been an absolute delight. We are going to take a very short break and be back with lots more in just a minute.
Even though life has storms, God is there to see you through. Hi, I'm Steve Douglas, and Adam Davis shares a literal storm in the life of the Apostle Paul.
Life is certainly going to have storms, just like Paul when he was on his journey to Rome and a storm came up. He knew that they were going to be shipwrecked, but everybody would be safe and no life would be lost. He had faith in that moment.
But how about when you're in the midst of a physical, emotional, or spiritual storm?
Now, we can read that story in retrospect and see, well, that's a beautiful story, but it's beautiful until you're in the middle of the storm. It's easy to talk about faith in peace. It's difficult to practice faith in the middle of the storm, but that's when we need it the most.
Maybe you need help and encouragement today on how to lean on Christ in the midst of your storm. Go to makingyourlifecount.com for some helpful resources.
Welcome back to the show. It's 32 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here with you. I'm so glad you're listening, and thank you for supporting Faith Radio. Always a... I never get tired of saying that. Ever, ever, ever. So my next guest is Jamie Rasmussen. He's the senior pastor of Scottsdale Bible Church, and he's been serving as an ordained pastor for more than 25 years in Detroit, Ontario, and Cleveland. Now he lands in Scottsdale, so something's going right in his life. He's written a book called How Joyful People Think, 8 Ways of Thinking That Lead to a Better Life. I want to learn everything I can from you right now, starting now. Hi, Jamie.
Hey, Bill. Good to be with you.
I want to say I've been to your church on more than one occasion. When I work in the Scottsdale area, I always go to Scottsdale Bible Church.
Well, exactly. The desert is a rather young place, but Scottsdale Bible has been here for 55 years,
yeah,
which is really old for the desert.
Yeah, and I've had great experiences there. So this is really cool. I'm speaking to you now. And, of course, your book has got a foreword by Dr. Larry Crabb, and we love him like crazy here on the show. He's actually going to be on the show Wednesday.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, Larry's a dear friend and has really influenced me a lot in my own thinking and the way I view the Lord and all that. So, yeah, he helped a lot with this book, too.
Well, I want to talk about joy because I love the idea that every day when we get up, we get to decide how we're going to choose to live. And I get up and I sometimes play the grumpy card, and I don't know why, but I do. And then I try to work my way through the morning, and then all of a sudden I'm a little out of the grumpy, but maybe not. And I don't have to do that every day, do I?
No. Here's the deal about joy that I've been learning. I'm 54 years old. I've been a Christian for 30-plus years. And, you know, there are some people, very few, that are naturally joyful. My wife's one of them. She wakes up happy. She goes to bed happy. She's just a very naturally joyful person. The rest of us, as I say quite often, have to fight for joy. And yet what I've learned over the years is that it is a choice, because we can choose how we think, and the Scripture has some prescriptions on that level. And we can choose to at least place our lives in the realm of joy if we want to.
Yeah, Jamie, I love the way you expanded on the word whatever. That's a word that maybe is a little misunderstood. Would you tell our listeners what you mean by the word whatever?
Yeah, you know, the book is built upon one verse in the Bible, Philippians 4:8, that many Christians are familiar with. You know, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, and so on. And then it says, think about these things. And the promise of verse 9 is that the God of peace will be with you, and joy is always a byproduct of that. So the word whatever appears 6 times in one verse in Philippians 4:8, and what I point out in the book is that the way the Bible uses it is very different from how it's used today. Today, people use it either in the Doris Day way, from that great song, you know, que sera, sera, whatever will be, kind of a fate-laden, you know, whatever usage, or the sarcastic teenager usage when you ask your teenager to clean their room and they say, whatever, something like that. But the Bible uses this word very differently. It's a word of extent, of vision, of as much as. It's a word that begs us to dream about all the potential possibilities associated with whatever it's being used in light of. So when it says whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, it's telling us to think of every possible scenario that could be true of our lives if we were to think in that way.
All right. I wonder if many listeners have put their arms around that before today, you know, the whatever word, because the way you describe that and put it in a great context makes me excited about that word.
Yeah, but I'm not sure we have. I mean, I know that at least, Bill, for me, I hadn't until 3 years ago I started this project. A great example I share in the book is that, you know, I'm a driver. When I was 15 and a half and my dad was teaching me to drive back in Cleveland, he said to me one day, "Hey, Jamie, driving is an honor, not a sport." And I've joked for years, I got that one backwards, because I love to drive and I love to drive fast.
Mm-hmm.
And the downside of that is that there's times I'm on the freeway and I'm frustrated, stuck in the left lane with somebody slower or whatever, and it can really grate on my nerves. And I'm not proud of that. It's just the way that I get. And what I've learned to do over the last few years is that when anything like that, whether it's driving or something, comes my way in the day, I will start to filter it through the thought patterns of Philippians 4:8. So whatever is true, well, it's true that sometimes I drive in the left lane, you big old hypocrite, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever is honorable. Well, it wouldn't be honorable to tailgate this guy, or whatever is just, you know, well, justice isn't for me to have on the freeway. That's for police officers. And I point out in the book that just going through the exercise of all the potential whatevers calms me down, puts me in a better frame of mind, gets me in the right lane, and I start to have joy.
Boy, I don't know if I want to be living in your head when you're behind the wheel.
No, you don't. I'm a mess.
let's define true joy, Jamie, like what it is and what it's not.
Yeah. You know, joy is distinct from happiness, Bill. Happiness is actually described in the New Testament. It's the Greek word hedone, where we get the English word hedonist from. It's simply pleasure. I talk about this in the book. And the love of pleasure is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. It's the love of a good meal, or, you know, the love of watching a great TV show or whatever gives you some pleasure. But that is so different than joy. Joy is a longing, a desire, a thirst that's built upon hope. Lewis said that joy is an unsatisfied desire that's more desirable than any other satisfaction. And so joy, most writers have pointed out over the years, goes so much deeper than mere happiness. And the beauty about that is this longing and desire that conjures up hope in the soul is that you can have joy in the midst of difficulty, in the midst of even depression and discouragement. You can have joy there. You're not going to find happiness there. But God is willing and wanting to give us joy in any and every circumstance, a la Paul the Apostle in jail in Rome singing songs. So there he is in jail facing his death, and he has joy.
Yeah, that's crazy. So is joy filtered through prayer, or... I'm just trying to figure this out, Jamie. Because I think of Paul, you know, heading towards execution, singing. I go, that's pretty cool. And now I'm trying to think, if I'm going to be joyful all the time. I mean, you did some analysis, and when you're in your car, you did Philippians 4:8 in your head, which was very cool. But do we find joy when we're just in prayer, or do we have joy established as how we're going to live throughout the day when we get up?
Well, that's a great question, Bill. And let me, I've been trying to say this often as I've been talking more about joy over the last couple of years. The one thing that I don't want ever to be misunderstood when we talk about joy is that somehow the pathway to it is formulaic. It's not. There's a complexity in the scriptures, and you're pointing this out, that joy comes through prayer, it comes through faith, it comes through closeness with God. As I point out in the book, it comes through how we think. I would also say joy comes through circumstances, it comes through relationships. There's no one set formulaic pathway to joy. Having said that, there are things in the scriptures that say, as you posture your life in light of these things, like how you think, you're going to posture your life in a position that God's going to give you some joy. Because at the end of the day, we need to remember joy is a fruit of the Holy Spirit. It's God's work in us. So our job is to kind of get in the way of what God is doing in a good way, stand in the pathway of what God is doing. And I point out in the book that we can do that in how we think about the world around us. That's one of the ways we can tap into joy.
Jamie, have we kind of lost our sense of wonder?
Oh, gosh. You mean as evangelicals?
I suppose. I mean, because there's so much joy to be had in such simple pleasures. But if we've lost our sense of wonder, we ignore all that.
Yeah. I don't know if this is what you're getting at, Bill, but I think we have. I mean, we mentioned Larry Crabb earlier. Larry's influenced me this way. You know, many Christians today want to get it right. They want to have a technical approach to their faith, you know, to, quote, do the right things. They want to get their emotions right, their finances right, their marriage right, their kids right. The problem is that, again, life is not formulaic. Life has a lot of mysteries and profundity to it. And at the end of the day, life is all about relationship. That's what Jesus taught us. It's love of God, love of others. It's messy, but as we enter into the tunnel of chaos of relationality, God tends to meet us in that. And one of the things I point out in the book is that that's where joy can be found as well, if we're willing to do that.
Well, thanks for being gracious with me, Jamie, because I hardly ever know what I'm getting at. All right, you mentioned three things to practice before you react. You say wisdom, perspective, and discernment. Let's go to town on each one.
Yeah, you know, that's chapter three of the book, and I write about the fact that it's my favorite chapter because it's so not me. I write about, you know, the scriptures say whatever is honorable, think about these things. Sometimes it's translated noble or dignified. It's the Greek word semnos, and when you drill down on it and its rich history, it's describing a non-reactionary person. And part of what God is saying is that we find joy in not reacting to everything around us, but we find joy in a stable, more solid approach to the circumstances and issues around us, more of an unmovable force, and to learn to think that way. And then the question becomes, once you get that, is how do you do that? And I point out in the chapter that through self-control, through wisdom, and through steadfastness, one can start to develop a non-reactionary spirit. And the key to me, at least there, for me personally, was self-control, because I tend to not want to slow down before I respond. I tend to react to things around me in a fast-paced sort of way. And my wife years ago said, you know, you need to count to five before you respond. And then our joke in the family is 5 seconds isn't near long enough. So I point out in the book, I count to 60. Sometimes it's days before I respond, because self-control is something that we can do as followers of Jesus. And through self-control and wisdom and steadfastness, we can start to develop a non-reactionary spirit. And here's the cool thing, Bill. It really does. C.S. Lewis wrote a book called Surprised by Joy. You will find yourself surprised by joy if you can learn to apply these things to your life.
Mm-hmm. The reactionary thing, Jamie's got me thinking, and that's never a good thing on live radio, that I think. because the whole idea of reacting poorly, I'm guilty of, I think, every day. Mm. Thanks for bringing that up.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Anything I can do to make you feel more guilt, that's my job.
But how do I take that negative reaction garbage and get joy in its place so I do calm down, I don't react, you know, is counting to 60. I mean, I think it sounds like it's good in theory, but I don't usually do that very well.
No, none of us do. I think it's one of the reasons, Bill, that we do a drive-by when it comes to this verse. You know, Philippians 4:8 is one of the most common verses in the Bible. Everybody learns it and memorizes it and quotes it. But what we do in the book, and I did this actually for my church 3 years ago, is that we slowed way down and we park in front of each word for an entire chapter. We did it for an entire week when I did this with our church. And we do what I call a deep dive into those and slow down and try to understand exactly what Philippians 4:8 is getting at with these different lines of thought. But that's where the real work starts, because I've shared with my church regularly, Bill, that these things take a lifetime to master. As you say, we fail every day. But as Swindoll said so well years ago, if sanctification can be 3 steps forward and 2 steps backward, at least we're moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that the scripture promises is that as we, you know, fumble our way through learning to think as God wants us to here, joy really can start to become more a part of our spirit and become part of our relationships.
All right, Jamie, I want to ask you about joy killers when I come back from break. I'm speaking to Jamie Rasmussen. He is the senior pastor of Scottsdale Bible Church. He's written a book called How Joyful People Think, 8 Ways of Thinking That Lead to a Better Life. Take a short break and be right back. It is 12 minutes until the top of the hour, and My joy will be there if my guest is still on the line. Jamie Rasmussen is my guest. He's a senior pastor of Scottsdale Bible Church. He's written a book called How Joyful People Think, 8 Ways of Thinking That Lead to a Better Life. You still there, Jamie?
I'm still here.
What a relief. All right, let's talk about joy killers. So if I'm believing, you know, lies about God or lies about myself or others or my situation, if I'm doing that, I'm guessing my joy is dead on arrival.
Well, sure. I think most people would agree that wrong thinking is going to lead to a lack of joy. So if you think wrong about a situation or wrong about your life in general, it's going to hard to be to line your life with reality, and you're not going to have joy in that.
Mm-hmm. You did a whole chapter on pleasure. Whatever is lovely. Why did you dedicate a whole chapter to that, and can you talk about that chapter?
Oh, sure. And that's a great question. Look, one of the things we do in this book is try to get down to the root meaning of these words as they occurred 2,000 years ago in the Greco-Roman world, because that's what Paul was writing in as he was inspired by the Spirit. But to get behind just our English translations and understand the core meaning of what these words are about. And that word lovely is a fascinating word. We translate it correctly. It's the Greek word prosphiles that comes from the word phileo, which many people know means love. And phileo means a pleasurable type of love. And so the word prosphiles means to think about whatever is toward pleasurable love. And once you understand that, Bill, what you start to realize is that what Paul is saying there, what God is saying there, is that we need to start to think about things and even align our lives with things that give us pleasure. You know, John Piper's right. It's okay to be a Christian hedonist in that sense. And what I point out, however, is that when you follow then the trajectory of that word throughout the Greek Old Testament and the New Testament, and you see all of its occurrences, we do this in the chapter, you realize it kind of fits into three buckets that the Bible says to find your pleasure in safe people, in solid activities, and in the sound view of God. And so to your original question after the break here, what we're realizing just in this simple word, lovely, is that we can learn to find pleasure in how we think about God, in the activities we have, and in the people that we hang around. And in those, rightly understood, we can start to find joy.
I like that, Jamie. And I'm thinking about lovely, and is beauty, does that fall under the lovely category, beauty?
I think it would. I don't talk about that in the chapter, but
yeah.
I think that would. I think that if you, for instance, if you find beauty in a mountain stream or beauty in a, I think that would be included in those solid activities and things like that that can give you pleasure and give you joy.
Because I guess the next question would be where should followers of Christ find pleasure? Because, you know, if you look at beauty, we never tire of beauty. I mean, you certainly tire of food and sex and everything else, but you reach a point where you go, I'm not tired of looking at the ocean with the water crashing against the shore. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, again, I argue in the book that we should find our pleasure in certain kinds of people and certain kinds of activities and in a particular view of God. And so let's take the people thing, for example. You mentioned that you had Larry and others like that on your show often. You know, they would tell you that trying to stay in toxic, codependent relationships, you know, are probably not at the end of the day going to give you peace and joy when it comes to your walk with God, if those are your core relationships. And so I write about in the book how to find and what to look for in safe people. In fact, I list about 10 traits that I look for in the safe people around me that can give me joy. And if I can have, Bill, just a few relationships like that, it prepares me then to minister to all the other people that come my way that probably aren't going to give me joy, that probably aren't going to be safe, but that God wants me to minister to. But my base and the joyful part comes from those safe people.
Jamie, can you give me a couple of those traits? Because you have me very interested in what they might be. Just a couple.
Yeah. Well, one of them you're going to love. I mean, obviously it would include things like, you know, that they know the Lord and love him. But, you know, one of my traits that I list is humor.
Oh, good.
I grew up in a home where it wasn't a Christian home, but my dad, who's still alive, has a tremendous sense of humor. In fact, it's kind of funny, he finds humor even in difficult situations. And when my mom was alive, she would say, you know, Frank, not everything is funny. And he would look at her and say, yes, Carolyn, everything is funny. and so for me, you know, somebody who has a good sense of humor tells me they have a take on life that is relaxed in one sense, that's critical thinking in another sense, because they can find humor even in difficult situations, and that makes me feel safe. So humor, godliness, people that are good listeners. Another one I list for me is faithfulness. Mm-hmm. That's huge.
Yeah.
Because in my world, people come and go. And so, you know, and people say they love you right away and then go find another church, which is fine. I get that. But those that stick around through thick and thin in my life, they capture my attention and they become safe people for me.
Well, I love you right away, and I'll have you back on the show whenever you want to come back on the show. So there you go.
Invite me. I'd love to.
Yeah. Let's talk about my guest before you, Jamie. We were talking about a book she wrote called Holy Sexuality. And so when we talk about joy and holiness, is it possible, like, for the average person today sitting in the church pew to be holy? And how do you become holy?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, one of the words mentioned in Philippians 4:8 is this idea of holiness. It's the idea behind the word pure. Whatever is pure, think about these things. And it's the Greek word hagnos, where, you know, the main Greek word is hagios for holy, and so this is a cognate of it. And yet what's cool about this word is that it's used in both behavioral as well as relational contexts. And most people think of holiness as a behavioral thing, like I need to be more righteous, get my act together, and there's truth to that. But what I point out in the book is that holiness also has a relational component to it. In other words, God measures our holiness in how we love others, how we interact with them, how we relate to them, how we relate to Him. And what's so cool about that is that it's not an added pressure to our holiness. It's actually where we find joy, that when we can learn to elevate holiness not just to the behavioral component but to the relational component of our life, we're not going to be as legalistic, not as grumpy. We're going to find ourselves more grace-filled and more joyful even through our holiness.
Mm-hmm. We have a couple of minutes left, Jamie, so let me ask you about joy and the joy you might have from having a personal reputation that you like. you're pleased.
Yeah.
I don't know how I'm saying this, but you're pleased with your reputation, or you're feeling like you have joy as a result of it.
Yeah. Again, that's one of the things that God asks us to think about to give us joy is our reputation. And it's so cool because when you think about it, a reputation has two components. It's made up of your behavior, but then what others observe about your behavior. And when both of those things align, when you have good behavior and others see it, you develop a good reputation. But conversely, if you aren't very good and others see that, you got a bad reputation. But even more crazy, there's times where you are good and others don't see that, and that messes with your reputation. And so part of what God is saying is, hey, give thought to your reputation, work as hard as you can on it, because when it's good, it will go well with others around you, and that will give you joy. Real quick, a story along that lines. When I was writing the book, I was hiding away at a little place in Michigan, and a real small town. In fact, the town is 1/7 the size of my church. That's how small this town is. And the AC went out, and I called the AC repairman, found out he was a believer, and we had a wonderful conversation. And a few days after that, I was telling my neighbor about this HVAC guy, and he said this to me, Bill. He said, man, that guy is a really good guy, and
wow,
Everybody loves him.
That's
and
awesome.
I thought, wow, his reputation went before him, and it's really
cool. Jamie, you're a smart, funny guy that uses occasional big words, so I'd love to have you back on the show.
I'd love to be back.
All right, we'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.